CliffCentral.com.
Good morning. Weekend's over, you've got to get back to work, you've got to get things done. Don't think of it as, oh no, it's Monday, I have to get to work. Think of it like, this may be the week that I actually really do exactly what I'm meant to do and more and figure out that I like what I'm doing. And
exactly.
Who knows, you know?
This is the week where I make things my bitches.
Right, make things my bitch.
Yeah, not just one thing, just lots of things.
Ah, good morning, everybody. All right, how was the weekend? Ben doesn't want to talk about sport, but he's paid to do it, so he has to.
Yeah, I am paid to suffer through it all. The rugby was, well, even though we won, it was crap. Bafana won something, though.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I don't know if it means anything, but they won something.
All right.
I'm going to beat Swaziland or South Sudan.
We'll take it, right? We'll take
anything.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, it is.
Very good.
All right. Sure. And it was chilly this morning. I woke up, got out of bed, and I looked at the temperature gauge on the car, and it said 1 degree. I thought, nice.
Yeah, great. It's really nice. There's like a section of my journey here. It goes through this dip. There is no temperature. There's only pain.
Are you on the bike?
Yeah. Well, it's like there's this twilight zone area. It's like the Bermuda Triangle of my life. It's really close to a river.
Yeah.
And
you get on there and it's like the most evil, yeah. Wicked, wretched.
Like you walk into a pocket of shit, basically. And this is what it is. It's so cold. It's like biting.
Oh. Morning, Mabs.
Does July get colder?
I think so.
Yeah, so the worst is still to come.
Yeah, it always is, Mabs. But I did hear a bird tweet this morning. And
poor
I stopped.
Thing. The poor thing, did it fall off the tree and get and split?
No, but it's like great sound.
17 pieces.
It's that great sound. He wasn't like frozen. It was a tweet, genuine tweet.
Okay, all right, we'll take it. I mean, right at this stage, it's the worst now. If we can make it through July, which is next, it starts on Friday, right?
Hooray!
Yeah, then you're pretty much there. All right, so anything fun this weekend, Mavs?
On Friday, I hung out with Anthea Gardner at her offices.
Oh, nice.
Ah, is that how it happens? So you get invited and, well, we don't.
Yeah, I mean, she actually likes me. it's just, you know, it was one of those experiences where when you leave, you realize all the poor choices you've made in your life. you get to these offices and they're on the rooftop with a bar and there's a putt-putt course and there's a helipad for all the helicopters that land. And you just walk away thinking, I've definitely made poor choices in life. I should be living that lifestyle.
Yeah, but then you don't see them during their work hours. Because I went there last week on, what was it, Tuesday. I had a meeting with Anthea and I saw them all hard at work behind their screens. And I mean, Anthea says that when she gets home, after spending a day, and especially when she was at Morgan Stanley, she had 5 screens in front of her, going nonstop. And she said when she got home, she would just stare at the wall. Because she was so tired of looking at screens.
I bet she was sorting numbers on the wall, though.
Absolutely. You know, it's kind of, your wall starts becoming animated. Because you're so used to seeing movement on these screens. And listen, I mean, everybody's job sounds great when they show you the best parts of it.
Yep.
I mean, we get to meet all these amazing people that come in here. We get to finish our show by 9 o'clock when most people only start their day. We get to do fun things. We get to talk nonsense. We get to laugh a lot. But if you show people just that, and you don't show them the waking up at 4:30 in the morning, and the driving on the quiet roads in when no one else is up, and you know, you think about how you feel pressured to have to come up with stuff to talk about some days. Not all days, but some days. Then obviously it has a different approach. And every job's like that. I reckon, you know, the guy who has been running a multi-million dollar corporation for the last 3 years, you see him get into his fancy luxury car and drive home earlier than everyone else at the office. You think, wow, must be cool to be him. But then he has to go home and he lies in bed stressing about big decisions he has to make the next day. And suddenly his job doesn't look so much fun, right?
And all the years getting to that position.
Yeah.
All the hours.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The years that he had to just take orders. And
the failed relationships.
Yeah, do what he's told and broken up with this wife because she couldn't understand why he was putting in such long hours. I mean, you know, every job. And then you sometimes even get jealous of the people with the menial jobs. Like you think, okay, being a security guard is not fun. You have to sit there and it's cold and you have to stay up all night and then someone needs the gate opened and someone needs the gate closed and you have to be vigilant because there might be stuff going down. You think, but most of the time, the guy can just like kind of doze off. It's not that bad. And what are the real consequences of failure for him? You know, he'll be moved to another post. Doesn't do so well.
Look, there are often times where I'm driving around and I see, you know, a homeless person or somebody who's struggling. And I think to myself, yes, I'm lucky. And then there are also, on the other side of the coin, other times where you see, the, you know, the rich lifestyles. And you're like, oh, okay, yeah. Not that lucky.
No, sure. But it's interesting to see these contrasts and to kind of figure out where you'd fit into it. What you got to remember, and I always like, because I'm a history student, I like bringing this up. What you got to remember is everybody's life. Everybody on earth right now has a better life than any ancestor of theirs did. Everybody. Even the poorest person in South Africa has a better life than their grandparents had. And every generation before that. I mean, there might have been very grand people in my family history, but in between, there have also been people who've had nothing. They've been castaways and refugees, and there are all kinds of horrible stories, but basically they never had an iPhone or running water or a heater or a roof that didn't leak or any of that stuff. So just without even thinking, I'm having a better life than any ancestor of mine before. Absolutely I am. The amount of information I have access to, the kind of music I can listen to, the way I can just get from point A to B really quickly. Like any ancestor of yours before 1920 at a maximum, and I think there's probably 1930 would be a safer bet, would have to have driven everywhere they went to go. Any ancestor of yours before 1870, again, being very liberal here, but 1870, it would have had to walk wherever they were going. Any and all. Maybe if they were lucky, horseback. And going back further than that, it just gets worse and worse. So, life is good. And on the days that we feel sorry for ourselves, we just got to remember it could be a whole lot worse. Right?
Yeah, that's so true. Like, you go back to look at stages where animals either ate you, now we have pets.
Yeah, animals used to eat us.
Yeah, that's just progress.
You'd be walking and suddenly you'd be lunch.
So I was watching that show, Rick and Morty, that people were saying we would start watching. And there's this really great episode where the dog becomes a robot, basically. It gets this, like, android, like, gigantic body.
Yeah.
And then the dogs take over the world.
Yeah.
It's such a clever and funny show. I watched probably 6 episodes this weekend.
Well, you see, we've got to listen carefully to when our audience tell us that we've got to watch something.
Yeah.
You better know they're right.
So you know Back to the Future, right? There's the Doc and there's Marty McFly.
Mm-hmm.
So basically it's a rip-off of that.
Oh, okay.
And the guy who started creating it first had a cartoon called 100 Cosbys. It was a house. It was a house with 100 Bill Cosbys. And they were all over the place, just 100 Bill Cosbys in the house. And then Bill's lawyers said, please stop making this cartoon. To which they were like, okay, well, screw you guys. And then as a protest, because Back to the Future had the same, I think, house or whatever it was, production house than the 100 Cosby, or Cosby Show. So they said, okay, screw it, we'll make a Back to the Future ripoff. So they've got Doc, as in the character, yeah. and then Marty McFly. And all day, Doc makes Marty do these strange things for science. And they have all these weird adventures, and they create things, like they screw the world up, and it's so clever, so funny.
Sounds brilliant. All right, hey, Pashita, what's up?
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Good weekend?
Awesome weekend spent traveling.
Oh, nice.
I just arrived from Mozambique.
Oh, wow.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
You. Yeah. Where you spoke Portuguese the whole weekend.
I spoke, there was a whole lot of Portuguese.
Flax, you do anything fun?
Let me see. Friday night, I was probably in bed by 7:30.
Why?
I was just exhausted.
Yeah.
Last week, what a killer week.
That was me last night.
Yo.
Michael, it wasn't the white carbs knocking you out again, was it?
No, I'm going easy on that. I'm back on the straight and narrow, guys. I'm gymming every day, running 2.5 kilometers a day.
Nice.
I'm finally starting to fit back into my pants.
Nice.
Did you get a bit fat there?
Yeah, I got to a point where I was thinking I need to go to a dietitian, and then I was like, screw that. I don't need somebody to tell me that I need to go to gym and eat healthy.
Yeah.
So then I was like, I can do it myself. I'm not wasting money on a dietitian. So then I said to myself, if I say I'm not going to a dietitian, then I goddamn better do it myself.
Yeah.
So.
And he's very goal-driven. Mm. I mean, like, if you decide you're going to do something, you do it.
Yeah. So, Saturday I went to go watch the rugby at a friend's farm.
Mm-hmm.
Saturday night was at the farm partying. Sunday went shopping with my girlfriend, which lasted like 10 minutes.
Why?
Because I caught an Uber and I went home. I've never been so irritated. Like, just shopping with somebody else, having to follow them around the shop and then wait for them to go from one thing, then no, they want the last thing they saw. Just back and forth, the whole lot of back and forth stuff. Eventually I said, listen, for the sake of our relationship, so we don't fight, I'm going to get an Uber, I'm going to go home, and then you can meet me there.
Good.
And then I started thinking, like, if shops really want boyfriends to come with, they must make a little seating area with PlayStations, FIFA. You go sit there, you don't even realize the time that passes. And then your woman's done shopping.
But why do men and women go shopping together? I don't understand that.
It's not a good move.
It was a failed plan.
It does not make sense to me at all.
You see, different motives. There's going to be a whole different way of
tackling it. I mean, if you know that you need a number of outfits, go in by yourself.
But this, again, comes down to evolution. You know that. I mean, hunter is the man and gatherer is the woman. The woman's a gatherer. She's going to go from place to place, checking out the best deal, and she's going to gather up the things that she wants, and she's going to pay for them.
Exactly.
And it's a whole modus operandi that men don't understand. Like, men have no understanding of... A shopping mall is built for women. there's no way that men know what to do in a shopping mall. I walk into a shopping mall, unless I have a list in my head or on my phone, and I follow that list to the letter, I don't want to be there. It's hell. And I'll walk in, I'll go to exactly the things I need, I'll get them, and I'm gone. Women want to browse, they want to compare prices, they want to try things on, they want to do all the stuff that we hate doing. And I understand it, because that's evolutionarily how women used to stay at home in the cave. They'd come out to the bushes and the sort of lands around there, and they'd pick a couple of berries, and they'd do some of this, and they'd do some of that, then they'd cook some of this, then they'd go out again, and they'd talk to some of the other women, and you know, that's kind of how it worked when the men were out, like, chasing a bison or something.
But then the shops, there's other shops in London, high-end shops, where they've created men crushes for men.
While
the women are shopping, the men can just chill there.
Yeah, so Flax is right. That's the way to keep guys happy.
Imagine your girlfriend saying, do you mind just going to go chill in the crush for a little bit, and I'll come fetch you later?
I think a lot of guys would be happy to do that. But how do you shop, Ben? I imagine Ben also does what I do. You go in, you've got a purpose, you do what you need to do, and you get out.
Yeah, I hate it. Also because, like, I don't need a lot of things, so it's not purpose me shopping. Like, I just got quite a simple lifestyle in that respect.
I hate shopping too, especially for clothes. Because first of all, I never look as good as a mannequin. And then eventually I just get sick and tired of trying on pairs of jeans that will never go over my ass the way that I want them to. It is such a painful exercise. I hate every second of it.
Yeah, but you do break a lot of rules. You're, like, not the typical. You understand that you don't. That's not normal.
What do you mean?
Like, most women love shopping.
I don't know that most women... I know plenty of women who hate shopping because it's a chore.
No, I'm not talking about groceries. Most women love clothes shopping. I mean, you are, again, very different.
But the thing with women is that, like, okay, I'm generalizing here, but they just want things, whereas guys need things. Like, I don't want to have a whole lot of clutter in my life, okay? I want certain things and we move on in life.
You're also different. You're a weirdo.
You gotta have variety.
Yeah, look, there's variety, and then there's wasting half your life searching for something you don't actually need because you feel that you need it.
And everybody should have a list, because that's how you waste money in these awful places.
Yeah, that's right.
Exactly.
Everybody should have a list, and you should stick to the list.
It'll keep you honest.
And sales are rubbish. On sale.
And people
oh,
see
the sale. I must buy three. Okay. So
yeah,
just,
exactly.
Yeah, it's called a false economy. Okay. No, but it's on sale. So it's fine. I'll buy more.
Guys, you're gonna spoil the whole economy. Shut up! Don't spoil it now. Don't get people thinking about these things.
Well, like, what's the Latin meaning of sale? There's something hidden here.
What? It's trickery.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
The word sale, it goes into someone's subconscious mind.
Yeah.
And it makes them, like, act differently. It's like we all have these trigger words in life. We've all been programmed. And then the word sale comes up, and then we just lose all rational sense.
Hunter says, every mall should have a bar. Wife will shop so quickly because she no longer... the longer she takes, the more he drinks, so she'll get done really fast.
Can you imagine there was a bar, and every time a dude walked in, it was like welcoming a family member, and everyone just went crazy. You're the one that got away. Well done.
That's funny.
Oh, wow. So was Liz upset with you when you left?
No, it was a mutual understanding. She could see. So what I would do was, while she was shopping, I would be like, no, I'm not wasting my time. I'm going to go wait in the line so that when you're done, we go straight to the front. But then I'm there telling everyone, please go next. I'm waiting for someone. Go next. I'm waiting. Eventually, yep. I was like, no, screw this. I'm going home.
Jeez.
I try to make shopping efficient.
But were you angry when you left? Or were you just like, I'm going to make a solution here?
Yeah, make a solution. Okay. You see, shopping to me is a mission.
Yeah.
I have a task. I need a jersey. I go in. I get a jersey. I exit.
Right.
Wow. It's not, I get a jersey, get a freezer chino, get this, get that.
Have a look at that.
The discipline. Yeah,
wonder what that is.
You would, I assume, Peshitta, you would be like the kind of shopper I tried to describe earlier. That you look around, you try things on. Yeah.
And then I get tired halfway. I'm so excited at the beginning. Then I get tired halfway and I just leave it and I walk away.
Peshitta, I can't imagine you getting tired at all.
You
don't strike me that kind of person. Your enthusiasm levels don't ever, like, dwindle.
Michelle says, I'm with Mubs. I hate shopping. I put it off as long as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Lindsay says, I won't even take my kids shopping with me. The kids stay at home with the dad. I go alone, which means I can disappear for hours.
Escape.
Quentin says, morning, good people of Cliff Central. Windhoek is just as freezing cold this morning. I watched John Oliver's European Union song last night. I'm still laughing my ass off. And, a lot of people still talking about the Brexit. We'll talk to Anthea about it today. With the benefit of a weekend of hindsight, what the hell has happened? Is it good? Is it bad? I heard a whole lot of British people were suddenly, after the vote, were online looking up, what is the European Union?
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Right? So it's not just it's not just South Africa that's filled with idiots. But apparently it's as many people who voted Remain as voted Exit that are looking it up.
Wow.
So they're dumb on both sides. I'm always amazed. This is the point with democracy, right? I mean, democracy is the worst system of government in the universe, except for all the others. That's what Churchill said. And his people have just gone through a process of either doing more dumb stuff or doing something clever, depending on your point of view. And it really is on a knife's edge, because the people who said exit, I think there are only 4-5%, there's a 4-5% poll difference, a margin between the two. But for the people on the one side, it is heretical to think the other way. I saw even Deborah Patter got into a fight with someone.
And then she deleted a tweet, apparently.
Yeah. Deborah Patter said something about, like, oh, this represents the worst of humanity. And
racist.
Some guy tore her a new arsehole. Said, like, yeah, well, you sneering elitist.
But Dory also mentioned something that she also saw online about how, isn't it, if from Britain you could work anywhere in any of the European countries without getting a work visa or without having to apply. So now you have to apply, since they've exited, they have to apply to go to each and all of those countries just to work there.
Well, that's what we have to do. I don't see why they shouldn't have to do it in Europe.
thought it was easier for them.
It's so hard for us to get into Europe or the UK that actually I think that Europeans and British citizens should suffer as much. I don't see why they should have an easy ride. Huh?
Bloody hell. Because they're in Europe.
Yeah.
They have left.
Well, tough. They're out now. What else happened this weekend?
Oh, the Oscar documentary. I watched 10 minutes of it this morning. Like, I really thought at some stage I'd be sympathetic towards this guy. I can't.
Have you ever been sympathetic?
No, I can't. Mm. It just doesn't strike me as anyone who's too sincere.
Did you watch it?
No, I was going to watch it, and then I saw a tweet by Barry Bateman where he said something along the lines of, oh, so nothing new, just another PR exercise for Oscar. And I
pretty
thought,
much.
Okay, then maybe I shouldn't bother.
No, that's exactly what it was.
What a pathetic PR exercise. Everybody I've spoken to who did watch it, and I spoke to about 4 people who did, said it was awful to watch. It was just pathetic. Not even sad and you feel sympathetic to him. It's pathetic. Listen to this.
I don't want to go back to jail. No, I don't want to have to waste my life sitting there. If I was afforded the opportunity at redemption, I would like to help the less fortunate like I had in my past. I would like to believe that if Reva could look down upon me, that she would want me to live that life.
It's all about him, huh?
Always.
Isn't it amazing?
Continuously.
Like, you killed this chick and now you think she's sitting somewhere that she wants the best for you? Really? How can you be so... And what a waste of my life, he says, for me, special Oscar Pistorius, to be in prison. I could be so much more useful. I'm such a useful person.
Yeah, it's like, where does he get the choice? Why does he still think he has a choice? Does he not know how justice works, how law works?
This is obviously him moving around on the stump.
I want to see how stable you are when you're not on your prosthetic limbs.
Do you want me to walk without my...
Yeah, would you do that for me?
They make him walk around in the stumps.
They try
again.
And say that I broke down a door with a cricket bat standing on my stumps.
Mm.
I can't even hold a cricket bat up if I don't have my arms to balance.
Yeah.
And the mark on the door is too high to have hit if I had my legs off. I don't have balance, that's why I put my legs on when I wake up in the morning, and it's painful to walk far distances. There's been an argument, why didn't, you know, if the door was right there in the bedroom, why didn't I get Reva and run away? Mm. I can't run away.
No.
And I can't defend myself.
Oh, boy. Can you imagine? I'm so glad I didn't watch it. I would have been annoyed.
Well, Piers Morgan always, you know, won for the attention. He just said Oscar Pistorius is a murderer and a liar.
Shannon, what's up?
Hi, how are you guys?
Good. This is Shannon, the piece of ass, who's... one of our listeners. Hey, Shannon.
I just wanted to say a few things about the whole Brexit. I mean, I know it's only been a couple of days and, you know, everybody's still a bit upset about it. We've got out people saying that people who voted in should just get on with it. And, I mean, I appreciate that. But when you realise how this affects you as an individual, it becomes real. So,
right. So hang on. First of all, how did you vote?
I voted in to remain. Because I see the bigger picture. I feel that although David Cameron had a plan, like, you know, that's the thing. People don't understand. David Cameron had a plan for remaining. Yes, it wasn't the greatest, but there was a plan. The people who wanted out, they didn't have any kind of plan. They just threw reasons that I think, vote out, this is why you should vote out, because of cake, because, you know, potentially, you know, all this other shit, like, oh, no, we're going to give you £350 million for the NHS and all that stuff. And it turned out, oh, no, I didn't say that. So all these people now voted on the assumption that this is going to happen. And they turned around and said, oh, no, I didn't say that. I've been watching clips and reading this the whole weekend, having discussions, and there's so many people who voted out that now regret their decision. And as much as, yes, I feel pleased about that, I'm kind of like, well, why didn't you think about that before you voted? Why didn't you do your research? For me, I didn't listen to what the media was telling me, what I was being thrown at on social media. I had to do my own research to see what I was comfortable with voting with.
Tell me, how is it going to affect you personally, Shannon? I mean, you mentioned that's the reason that you decided to do a remain.
Well, the thing is, like, I feel that with the job market especially, there's a lot of people I know that are looking for jobs. And I think if that were me, like, you know, if I was to try and look for another job now, someone would probably turn around and say, okay, we can offer you this job, but we're not going to be able to afford to give you what you're looking for. And there's a lot of people I know who are in that position now, and I kind of feel that that's not fair. And, I mean, also with the free movement and everything, with the free movement, it's kind of a case of now that's not really going to be possible, because at the moment, yes, you can still move around freely, but you are going to have to look for visas. You are going to have to get work permits. And I'm like, why do we need to, you know, do all of that? And I just think that the other part of it is the banks now will have to cushion the blow of this. And I'm like, but why? You want it out. Should you not suffer the full consequences of it? You know, why should it be down to the banks to now give zero interest and cushion the blow that you wanted? And as far as David Cameron goes, I mean, nobody's perfect. But the funny thing is, with him stepping down, the next person is the one that's going to have to issue Article 50. Are they going to have the balls to do it?
Yeah.
It looks like we could just remain anyway.
You got Boris.
And then there's going to be more upheaval. And as it is, there's people reporting hate crimes because they're being told, go back to where you came from. And that's another thing, the whole immigrant situation. I'm an immigrant, but is it because I'm white and because I contribute to society that I'm not one of those immigrants?
Yeah.
But then I'm an immigrant that steals jobs. And how am I stealing a job when you want to sit on your ass all day, watch Jeremy Carl, if not feature it with a freaking sum total of 5p, claiming benefits, and freaking worrying about the paternity of your litter?
Yeah, I mean, that is, and you're right to point that out. You know, there are a lot of very, very lazy, useless British people who are complaining all the time about immigrants who come in and work hard, but they themselves do absolutely bugger all.
Exactly, and yeah. It's like, so now I'm one of those stealing jobs and everything, but like I say, if they voted, there's a lot of people who voted on that basis, because now, like I said, people are reporting hate crimes. I'm seeing it all over Facebook and Twitter and everything, and I'm like, What is it? It's the ununited kingdom at the moment.
Yeah. Well, listen, thanks for giving us a perspective from inside. We got to get to Ben Sport, but I appreciate the call, Shannon.
Thanks, guys. Have a good day.
Thanks, honey. You too. All right. Well, there we go. You see? Nowhere's perfect. They're all... The whole world is just a mess. Coming up in a moment, Anthea with some money, Ben with some sport. Don't go anywhere.
I am a South African. I carry the hopes and dreams of my country and the generations to come. I know that it's not where I come from, but where I'm going to that really matters. At Sibanye, we believe the future of our country will be defined by our actions today, which is why we are committed to the development of our leaders. Sibanye, we are one. Visit us on sibanyegold.co.za.
Choice. Sometimes you have it, and sometimes you don't. AutoTrader gives you the choice. Now you can shop, compare, and buy new cars. Watch our expert video reviews and research before you buy. AutoTrader New Car. The choice is yours.
All right, before we get to Ben and the sport, Jonathan Witz just called in. Do you mind, Ben?
I do, Gareth, but that's not really my place, is it?
What do you want, Jonathan Witz?
I just want to say that that woman that phoned in about Brexit, clearly emotional, like everyone else, overreacting on Twitter, and not with any facts. You're not going to have to get visas. You never had to get visas. The Canadians don't need a bloody visa to tour Europe. So neither will the British, frankly. They'll set up their own agreement. It's not going to be a big deal. The Swiss don't need visas to tour Europe, and they're not part of the EU. The markets in the UK ended up 2.4% higher on Friday. In fact, they were in a better position than they were the week before. So all of this stuff is absolutely not.
Anthea's looking at you and shaking her head. Look, let's talk about this just now, Jonathan. But I have a feeling you also want to promote your show. So tell us about the Renegade Report.
Yeah, well, we discussed this for a good 25 minutes. All the good reasons why Brexit is the right thing to do. And if you're a Democrat and you're liberal, then you should be for Brexit and not against it, because you should be for governing over yourself and not being told what to do by people who don't live in your country or care about it at all.
All right. There we go. Strong point of view. And that's this week's episode of the Renegade Report. All right. There we go.
How rude.
Jonathan, we're doing... All right. Let's get into Ben's sport. Oh, we got some funny people on this channel. We really do. Let's get into it, Ben. What do you got for us?
Gareth, there's 39 days until the Olympics, but we haven't got any more time for the Olympics. We've got to get straight into the football.
Oh.
The Euros, the last 16. Oh. So pretty much men separated from the boys now. There's been some romantic stories, but over the weekend it was just PKs all round, really, for the lesser teams. Poland beat Switzerland 5-4 in penalties after a 1-1 scoreline. Northern Ireland scored a great goal against Wales, unfortunately in their own net, so Wales go through. And then Portugal beat Croatia. Did not see this one coming. I thought Croatia were going to be the dark horse team here. 117th minute winner for Portugal. And then on Sunday, it was just the big teams telling everyone else why they're big teams. France 2-1 over Republic of Ireland. Germany 3-0 over Slovakia. Slovakia conceded a goal of Germany. And then Belgium 4-0 over Hungary. 4-0. That is a hammering. So, that leaves us into today. Italy versus Spain. Big game there, 6 o'clock. And then England versus the might of Iceland at 9 o'clock. All those times, South African time. Massive, massive evening of football ahead. That is very, very exciting. You've got to think that Germany, well, more and more as they go along. These are the guys who obviously are the World Cup champions, right? So, remember Spain won the World Cup, then they won the Euros. This could be another way that Germany are going to do it. They are a great side. They haven't, they've never had an out-and-out striker, someone who's just so recognizable and prolific, but they've got a great bloody side. They really do. Such a strong defense and just organized team. As long as no one shakes the coach's hand afterwards, this team just is without flaws or faults or anything. Copa America, Lionel Messi. He's been playing so bloody well in this Copa America, thrashing in the goals, scoring hat-tricks, all that kind of stuff, but yet again could not score in the final.
Oh.
What made it even more frustrating is that it was 0-0, it went to penalties, Messi stepped up, and he missed his penalty.
Oh.
Chile then wins. Chile are the Copa American champions, 4-2 on penalties. So Messi again. It's just like Ronaldo. They put on the national team jersey, and they just they can never replicate the form they have in club football. Bit sad. Bafana won the CASAFA Cup.
Now that's really cool.
Ah, that's good.
Yeah, I can't find too much information about it. It's obviously not a really big deal. I know they were playing people like Botswana and Swaziland and Lesotho. I don't know.
So like powerhouse countries.
Yeah. Yeah. So what on Bafana? I mean, that's the win, Gareth. We'll take it all. We'll take every single
absolutely
win right now.
We're not going to complain.
In rugby, another great week of international rugby. New Zealand 46-6 over Wales. Wales eventually just fell to pieces. They had a really good sort of valiant showing down there. But New Zealand are the greatest team in the world. I think in the current world rankings, it's New Zealand 1, New Zealand 2, New Zealand probably 3, and then it's England. To say that,
really?
To say you could be the second best team in world rugby is like saying, well, great. And, you know, we're CASAFA Cup champions. That means we're almost African Cup Nations champions.
Not true.
There's a massive difference. There's a massive void between these two. Yeah. But Australia, the whitewash is complete. Eddie Jones' side went there and they've won 3 tests in a row now. So that's 9 from 9 for Eddie Jones, which just always confirms a good coach can turn things around for any team. 44-40 in the third test thriller.
Wow.
England's edged them there, which then led us to the SA versus Ireland game. Again, it wasn't a classic. Again, the box were pretty average, but they managed to win 19-13. Ireland, even though it was the end of the season, they're playing with a third string side. Everyone looked absolutely buggered, but these guys still got in. They still got into a position where they could have won their match. I think they ended up with like 70% possession, which is just diabolical.
Quinton says that they played the CASAFA Cup in Windhoek.
See, that just... Oh, there you go. Did you go, Quinton? I guess not. So, South Africa has so much work to do. I tried to write a blog post about this yesterday, but it was just too sad. I wrote like all the big talking points and nothing positive came out of this. The Springboks.
All right, sorry.
Nothing positive came out of this. We are in for such a dicking in the rugby championships. Like, it's just, you can try to be optimistic, which is a big flaw of all us SA supporters, because we've nothing really to be optimistic about at the moment. And this team, that they can only age a second string Ireland. And as spiritual as Ireland are, you've got to be really like ruthless at this stage. Elton Judge, there's still question marks around him. The forward pack was pretty good, but that back line, there's nothing igniting it. There's nothing happening there. Centre pairing looks out of sync. It's just depressing, really. 19-13 is a series win, and lucky for Ireland. In the 20 World Cup, well, South Africa took another thrashing there. Argentina, this time in the third and fourth place match, hammers the baby box 49-19. Oh, that's embarrassing. And then Ireland, well, they got hammered as well in the final. 45-21 to England, the rising force in world rugby. 45-21. What a thrashing that is. On to cricket. Well,
the English know how to handle victory.
Yeah, like complete and utter dicks. That's how they always handle victory. They've become extra smug. The media makes out like there's only ever one sporting nation in the world. It's happened before. They won the 2003 World Cup rugby. They didn't handle that well. Haven't won it ever since. But they're looking pretty good for 2019. Anyway, there was cricket over the weekend, which meant there was sadness for SA fans, as the Proteas conspired to, again, completely and utterly bottle a pretty good situation. They won the toss, elected the ball first on a slightly bouncier wicket. So because of the extra bounce, they decided to bring Morne Morkel in. He was completely useless, absolutely shite. You'd think of someone of his experience can offer something to the team. But again, you know, he just runs in there, he throws his hands in the air like he just doesn't care. He went for plenty, plenty runs. So I think there was 16 or something wides. And then people always go, oh, you can't blame the coach for bowlers bowling wides. But you've got to ask, what the hell are these guys doing? Is that they're professional outfits and they can't ever get under like 10 wides in a match. It's not far. They've got to go 21 yards, whatever it is, and they've got to throw a ball towards a certain area. Outside the area, the other team gets a run, and you've got to bowl the ball again. Is that not enough, Proteas? Stop doing it. They had the Windies at 21 for 4, okay? He got a feel for Kakisa Rabada. Like most youth in this country, the adults are just ruining everything for him. He's talented. He's a bright, charming young lad. Bowling-wise, he was devastating. I mean, he just rolled through the top order. 21 for 4, Gareth. They ended up getting heavy 200s, and the Proteas were lower bowled out for 100 short. They lost by 100 bloody runs in a semi-final.
Good heavens.
Choke central of note, and that's another must-win situation where these guys can't win. Aby de Villiers naturally, as you would expect, threw his full support behind useless and pretty much pointless coach Russell Domingo. But how is the press even reporting on that? How is that relevant? As a player, are you going to say, oh no, this coach is crap? Of course you're not, because you might not pick you.
Right.
You can't take these guys. We need outside influence from SA Cricket right now. I think everything's just too much of everyone's buddies and, oh, the team culture's so great. Bullshit, you're not winning anything. Who cares if you guys get along? I mean, you're humans. It's just, that shouldn't be the biggest achievement, that you get along. There's got to be wins. There's got to be action here. And Russell Domingo, well, it's just nothing here. His win percentage across his career with the Proteas is below 70% in both one days and T20s, where apparently he's done quite well. It's below 40 in Test cricket. I'll try to get into this on a slightly less emotional level during the bounce show today at 10 a.m. But it's just, it's woeful. How this guy can keep a job is just ridiculous. In any other sport, he would be unemployed about a year ago. But no, in SA cricket, he'll keep the job because everybody wants to pull together and we've all got each other's support. Big shit.
No. Get real!
There we go.
Fucking real!
Thanks, Claude. I was running out of words there.
Claude
Thanks.
Is your guy.
Anyway, Australia then won the Tri Nations. They beat West Indies because that's what you should do in cricket. You should beat the West Indies. Well done, Australia. Tennis, the Wimbledon starts this week. So if you don't like any of the sports I've just mentioned and you are nodding off, tennis is here. My buddy Malloy, starting today.
I've already got my PVR set to do its thing.
Oh, I was just about to ask you about that because that to me is always the middle of winter.
Yeah.
If you make it through Wimbledon and the final day is usually freezing, you know, you're sitting there with heaters on, watching the tennis. It's the only time I watch tennis, by the way.
Yeah. Well, it's a good time.
It's a good time, right?
All in white in Wimbledon. It's going to be quite something. Let's hope the rain doesn't ruin things.
So, who are we betting on here? Are we betting on Djokovic and Serena?
I'm so nervous for Serena.
Yeah, Serena needs the win here to tie with Steffi Graf, but she's been needing the win to tie with Steffi since last Wimbledon.
It's almost as if it's a kind of mental challenge.
Sorry, last year's Open. Yeah, she's got that sort of pinnacle where, you know, she's my age, she's getting on. And it's quite difficult to go from here. Anyway, we'll get you all the results and that kind of stuff probably from Thursday onwards. Because in the beginning, it's just Eastern Europeans and people you can't pronounce. And it's just not really that important. Golf. What a fantastic weekend of golf, though. The Quicken Loans National. Now, it was played at Congressional where Ernie Els won the US Open in 1997. Old Ernie made it to the final pairing on Sunday.
Really?
Yeah, he was right up there in contention. Unfortunately, he fell away with a pro tier like 72. He finished fifth in the end, which is still a bloody good result for Ernie. But
bullet,
yeah. That was him in the 70s.
Yeah, he needs a bit of luck, and he's...
And you got it.
He's got it, yeah.
But the big story here, Gareth, Bill Hurley the third, right? Going
who the hell's that?
Exactly, Bill Hurley the third going into this weekend, 607th ranked in the world. In his past 11 starts, he missed the cut 6 times. His best was 41st. This guy was a lieutenant in the U.S. Navy, right? He was a cop. He did active service in all kinds of places. He's got adopted child from Ethiopia. This guy's traveled the world, but his dream was always to play golf because him and his dad put forward this goal, right?
Right.
But this time last year, at this exact event, his dad went missing, and then no one knew where he was. They found him. He committed suicide. He shot himself in his own car going into this event a year earlier.
Ugh.
So this guy, still a bag of emotions, he now wins this event, the same event
that
marked the passing of his dad last year.
He won it.
Yeah.
Wow.
So if you want to get a bit of an interesting golf story today, Bill Hurley III, look up this guy. It's such an incredible story. It's a huge win for him. It's probably the biggest moment of his career by a long, long shot. Again, 607th in the world going into the final round yesterday. It's just amazing what sport can do for some people. And just so sad, you know, to mark the year anniversary of his dad's death, he wins the tournament where he got the news. BMW International Open, slightly happier affair. Henrik Stenson won that. It was his 10th European Tour title, and he was just too good throughout. But big news from a South African point of view is that we do have another world winner somewhere, Gareth.
Yay, who?
Yeah. Well, if you go into my Twitter feed, I just tweeted out how Grant Twiggy Baker, he won the big wave riding in Puerto Escondido.
Well, that's Anthea's kind of sport, yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Grant Twiggy Baker, you just see the way this guy was riding. He got a perfect 10 in the finals, Gareth.
Okay, friend of yours, Anthea? 10.
I'm certainly not going to get a perfect 10, and I wish I knew somebody who'd get do that well.
It's not all doom and gloom. We've got guys like Grant Twiggy Baker, who's doing things for South Africa out on the world stage. Really, really amazing result. Final thing, as we are out of time, the MotoGP in the Netherlands yesterday. Now, the MotoGP is always pretty exciting. It was absolutely pissing down in the Netherlands yesterday, so much so that stopped the race at one point. They came back, and the track was still so wet. People were leading, they were crashing out, going through corners, every 5 minutes, somebody was crashing out. I think 12 or 13 people were still there in the end. And Jack Miller won. Mark Marquez managed to hold on. It was like Survivor of the Netherlands yesterday. Mark Marquez held on, so he extends his lead in the top of the rankings. But Rossi went out. All kinds of guys went out. And it really was quite exciting. Starting this weekend is Tour de France. And new thing is, they're going to be checking for motors, but like properly checking. There's three different kinds of checks. The French sports minister believes that this is a bigger problem than doping, is these small motors in the bikes. So they're testing like the temperature of the bikes, the magnetic frequencies, all these kind of things. So it's all happening.
Where would you hide such a thing?
Gareth, they're so tiny, these things. You could put them under the saddle.
How much difference is a tiny little motor like that going to make?
Well, it just maintains momentum.
Pathetic. These cyclists are pathetic people. They really are.
Well, they're quite innovative. You've got to give them that much. That's all your sport for today. Big, big sporting wrap-up. 10 to 11 SA time today here on cliffcentral.com.
There we go. Excellent. Thank you, Ben.
She looks hard for the money. So hard for it, honey.
Wow. All right, Anthea. Lay it on us. Tell us about the Brexit with 2 days of hindsight. And I know that you and Mabali were drinking on the roof of your building.
Yeah, because we had to.
To make the pain go away.
That sounded like a lot of fun, Anthea.
It was huge fun.
I'm sure one day some of us might get invites too.
Mabali, you threw me under the bus there.
No, I did not. I absolutely did not. They're just feeling precious about it.
All right. So, okay.
You think
I'm not.
Know someone.
I'm fine with it.
Oh, my goodness.
All right. So, let's go. Where do we begin with the Brexit?
It was an unmitigated disaster on Friday. I mean, there were stocks that opened 18% lower. So if you wanted to sell, you didn't even have a chance. It fell in a heap. That was Capital & Counties. Investec was down 12-13% at one stage. I think it closed about 9% down. Barclays PLC in the UK, Standard Chartered, the banks, 34% down on Friday morning. It did bounce a little bit. So here's the question. After Brexit, is Barclays really worth a third less of what it was on Thursday?
No.
That's the question. Well, how do you know? So the big question, of course, is, or all the questions, are how much is it going to cost British companies and British banks to do business in Europe? So there was a lot of talk at Morgan Stanley on Friday because they have something called passporting privileges. And what it means is that they can have a head office in London and do business anywhere in Europe, any of the EU 28, now 27
right.
EU countries.
Right.
But what Morgan Stanley have to do now is that they have to open subsidiary branches in whichever country in Europe they want to do business. There was an article that went out on Friday saying that Morgan Stanley were going to move 2,000 jobs between Ireland and Frankfurt. Morgan Stanley came out afterwards and said that that's not completely true. They don't know, first of all, how many they're going to have, if they're going to have. It's going to cost them money to move people, to open offices in every country. And also...
But they're not going to stop doing business with Europe. And Europe's not going to stop doing business with them.
But it will be more expensive.
Well, in the short term. But in the long term, you know, sometimes principle against pragmatism is something worth taking note of. I mean, in this case, if you were an English person and you live in, I don't know, Bridgehampton or something, and someone says to you, there's a bunch of people in Brussels who are going to decide on whether or not you should pay X, Y, and Z as a part of your taxes, and what will go to forming a European Union army, which they were trying to do. Surely you should be able to say, no, I'm sorry, that's nonsense. And you can't. And once you're in, you can't complain about it. Once you can't leave halfway through. This is kind of their last chance.
But it's not like you don't have a say. Like, everybody has representation at the EU.
Not so really.
You
the
get
commission.
To discuss, you get to decide amongst yourselves. So David Cameron or his ministers would have sat on the EU Commission and said, well, actually, no, we disagree with this and we like that. I think the issue is the one currency. I don't think trade agreements are the issue. So sure, if you have one currency, one interest rate, then it's very hard to do business. Then it's very hard to grow your economy.
But they've never had the same currency as
well,
Europe.
Well, exactly, right? So then what's the problem?
There isn't one. And that's why I'm saying it's not a big deal. They'll figure, you know what, if you want to do business, you'll do business. Don't tell me the banks aren't going to keep doing business with Europe because they're not going to make money out of it. And if they're going to have to establish peripheral and satellite offices all over Europe, if it's still profitable for them, they'll do it.
Sure.
So to argue that, oh, it's going to cost them more and therefore they shouldn't do it and Brexit's an unmitigated disaster for them it's like saying, well, if doing business with Angola is too difficult, we should just not do business with Angola.
Yeah, but the whole point of globalization is that you want to make things easier. You want to do it so the other issue is tax, the tax implications as well. So if you are an EU member and you're doing business with the EU or other countries in the EU, then you have one kind of tax law that you abide by. If you are now British and you're outside of the EU and you're doing business with France, Germany, Spain, Portugal, you name it, you now have to apply for tax submissions in every single country.
Mm-hmm.
So it really is much more difficult to do business. And quite frankly, I was thinking about like long term, I don't think it's that big a problem. So I'm with you. Mm. Like short to medium term.
It's like storm in a teacup stuff for now.
Well, you know,
a
market.
British teacup.
The market hates uncertainty. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about that. You saw what happened on Friday.
Well, the market just are embarrassed they read it wrong.
Yeah.
Again, the market's embarrassed they read it wrong. The media are embarrassed they read it wrong. And everybody just completely got the British mood wrong.
Yeah, so from an investor point of view, definitely I read this one wrong, and I would not have expected it.
And you weren't alone.
Yeah, everybody, almost everybody got it wrong. And so, but I don't know if I'm embarrassed, as in I'm uncertain. Like, I don't really understand what has fundamentally changed. How much is it going to cost Morgan Stanley to do business now? What are the implications for this company that I hold, Capital & Counties? So they still have great properties in the center of London, but what does it mean? And there's a couple of things that I can figure out. So one thing, the pound has fallen by 10%. So now I know that there's going to be inflation in the UK. The banks have turned around and said they want lower loan-to-value. So if you're going to buy property in the UK before you could take out a 90% mortgage on the value of the property, now the banks are going to want a 20% deposit.
80% mortgage, yeah.
So it's going to cost more. It's going to be more difficult. And it will keep the property market subdued for a while, I think. I think interest rates are going to be lower or stay lower for a while, so that might help the property market. But because of this uncertainty, where you're going, and the property market really is an interesting one, because I think the especially London property market, really has been buoyed by foreigners buying.
Yeah.
Are foreigners going to want to buy? Do they feel secure enough that they will be able to repatriate the money when they sell? Nobody knows these things, right? I tell you what, if you are a property buyer, now is definitely the time, though.
Well, if you've got some cash lying around and you want to buy in the UK, now is it.
You're getting 10% more value for your money, but then the banks are going to ask you for a bigger deposit, and you're not sure about the repatriation and the taxes.
And you know the other thing about this Brexit that strikes me is that everybody's talking about how it's Britain that are letting everyone down and Britain are exiting and this is not great for European unity and all the rest of it. But the French are going to follow suit soon. The Dutch will follow suit after that. The Swedes are out.
Do you really think
it's going to happen? Yeah.
So there's a part of me, from the French point of view, I think if they call the referendum at this stage, they'd vote out.
Right.
But that's emotive. Because for the French, it's all about kind of having immigrants and that's the issue with the French. No doubt about that. There's a part of me that thinks, well, maybe the rest of the EU will see what happened to Britain and go, oh, we don't want to wipe £125 billion off our stock exchange because that's what happened on Friday. We don't want our pensions to suddenly fall in a heap. And by the way, what Jonathan Witt said was very interesting. He said that the market was actually up last week, which it was. It was down 3.5% on, or 3.15%, whatever, on Friday. For the week, it was still up. But for the year, it's down about 10%.
Okay.
So it depends on the time you're measuring. There's no doubt kind of that is an interesting thing. And also what he said about the passporting, If I was in the EU right now, I'd make the Brits apply for a visa. But that's just me because I'm South African and they make me apply for a visa, right? Like you can – Nicaraguans travel to Europe without a visa. So they're not going to make the Brits apply.
I think that the measurement that will be interesting would be to see Friday this week as compared with the end of close of markets on Friday last week.
Yeah, exactly.
Then we'll have some idea.
Yeah, more or less what the market's thinking. But the truth is, it's a long-term game.
Right.
And you're going to have to wait and see what's going to happen. So, of course, Moody's downgraded Britain's credit rating on Friday to negative outlook. And already that's going to have an impact, right? So cost of capital is going to go up for them. So banks, businesses are going, and the government are going to pay more for borrowing money and for doing business. Mm-hmm. And that fundamentally has an impact on shares, on the economy. There's a lot of talk about Britain and now the world going into recession because of that extra cost and the nervousness around doing business.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Politically, I think it's very interesting. Like the fact that Cameron, and I'm no political analyst, but the fact that Cameron resigned, it's as if he's checkmated Boris, right? So he said to Boris, right, so this is what you wanted. You're getting it. If you now have to run for the presidency. If you don't run, Prime Minister.
Yes.
If you don't run, you're going to look stupid. If you run and lose, then you look worse. And if you win, by the way, now you have to invoke Article 50, and good luck with that. Because if this country goes into recession, it's your fault. Cameron's played it, I think, fairly well. But if
that's what the people of Britain want, you know, who are the politicians to say to them, oh, no, we know better?
Sure.
This was a referendum. Let's not forget, this was not a bunch of politicians in Brussels who are ensconced bureaucrats who make decisions for people who they don't even speak the same language as. This is the people of England deciding what they wanted.
It was very close.
Wales and Scotland and Northern Ireland.
But it was very close, all right?
Of course it was, but there's still a margin of error.
Yeah.
You know, 4% can matter in a market.
Sure, absolutely.
So all I hear so far is this is going to cost us money.
But that's the point of doing business.
No.
Like expenses versus revenue.
No, but you've decided as a country, this is the way you want to go. And in order to get where you want to go, it's going to cost you some money. Well, that's what you got to do. What's more pragmatic than that?
Yeah, for me, it's this whole kind of reversing of globalization, just that's the part that kind of kills me. Like, I want to live in a world where I can travel wherever I want to and do business wherever I want to. And this definitely feels like a reversal of that and then back to nationalism. And as you say, if France had to vote now, they probably would vote out. Of course, if you're British and you're looking to go on holiday in Europe, well, guess what? It suddenly got 10% more expensive.
Oh, well, that's gonna hit those people who love going to Ibiza for the weekend.
There you go. And Benidorm and wherever the hell they go.
Exactly. Where? Benidorm.
Mallorca, right? It's all cheap. that's kind of where it is. And markets are going to stay volatile for a while longer.
Well.
So they're estimating that $2 trillion was wiped off the global stock market on Friday. And that's because it really is about this risk-off trade. So now what you're seeing is people going, oh, the world is a very uncertain place. These things can happen, possibly. Lots of people saying because of this, it could show that Trump could be the next president of the U.S., but that's like probably another discussion. And so what they're doing is they're moving away from risky assets like equities and going into safe haven, gold, or bonds.
But, Anthea, when a trillion, how many trillion?
2 trillion.
2 trillion pounds. Or
dollars.
$2 trillion was wiped off. Is that because the market put their bets on the wrong numbers? Or is that because a vote was taken?
It's kind of the same thing. So the market said, there's a vote being taken. We think it's going to go this way. It'll be all,
then the market
it'll all
got
be
it wrong.
Fine.
So the market should be the ones punished, not the people who voted for next.
No, because the market... The market is saying if it's a yes vote and we're all fine, or an in vote and we're all fine, then things carry on as they are. If it's no and they have to exit, then it costs more, the uncertainty of doing business, and things do change.
But then all these people who manage money all over the world maybe should have said to their people, we think it's going to be a no, we think it's going to be an exit. So put your money into gold and put your money into this and put your money into that.
So what I was getting at was that exactly that. So people have put their money in gold and into bonds. And what you're looking at now is that potentially U.S. treasuries are the, in inverted commas, or Swiss bonds are
safest.
The safe haven bet. And what happens when everybody rushes to a bond market is that the yields drop. So where before, if you were buying American bonds, you were getting 2% for your money. You were getting 2% yield. Before, if you wanted to be in equities, you were thinking you could get 10%, 15%, maybe 20%.
Right.
Now you're getting 2%. If everybody then goes to these U.S. bonds, the safe havens, you're going to probably end up with what? 0.5%? Are you happy getting 0.5% a year on your money? And by the way, this is another thing we don't talk about, which we really should. South Africa is a good example, because if you are getting 4% on your money in South Africa in the bank, 4.5% call it,
right,
and inflation is over 6%, you're getting 2% poorer every year. So sure, safe haven assets are nice to a point because you don't lose money, but you're not making money either. In fact, potentially you're getting poorer.
Okay. All right. But then this is the same as old Dangote in Nigeria losing out because of the oil price drop.
Yes.
Not his fault.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Nothing to do with him. And he just loses as a result of the deal.
Yeah.
I do see that the rand to the dollar is 15.25 this morning.
The rand was an interesting one on Friday because immediately it weakened by 10% or 7.5%. And then it came back all the way to 14.98 or something, so below 15. And again, and then, of course, weakened, and now this morning, 15.27. So effectively, a weaker rand kind of, that I understand. That part I totally get.
All right. And the pound to the dollar, 1.34.
Yeah. So that's quite something, you know.
Where was it
the
before?
The pound is... Well, 1.44, I think we were talking last week, Wednesday.
Okay, so 10 pence more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
On every dollar.
That's right.
Yeah.
And it's the same, the pound is the same as for us with a rand, right?
Mm-hmm.
We have a weaker rand, we're net importers, and therefore inflation goes up because we're paying more for things that we import, and that's how it is. I suppose... In the long term, if you're an exporting nation, then for your export sector or industry, it's good because the weaker currency is good for exporters.
Someone says that the Brexit could be followed by the Grexit, Deportugal, Italy, check out.
I like that.
Austria, Finnish, Slovak out, Latvia, Belgium, and only Romania will stay.
I like checkout.
All right. Let's look at what happened on our markets here.
Yeah, so we took a bit of a beating. Banks and retailers obviously were the ones that were under pressure the most. Our All Share on Friday was down 3.6%, which means that for the year, we're still up 5%. So year to date for 2016, that's okay. And we did see some big negative moves. There were a few things, obviously Capital & Counties, Barclays was down 4%, Brecht was down 5%, Old Mutual was down 7.5%. There were a few stocks that were fairly resilient. Zeta, but that's because they put out an announcement. Sun International ended up, slightly up. Astoria, but that, again, the weak rand, so people are running kind of to safety. Mediclinic didn't come off as much as I thought it would, so I was quite relieved about that. In fact, the hospital groups were fine. So it's kind of where we are. Naspers, unfortunately, was the big one. It was down 1.5%. But then Naspers reported after market closed on Friday. So this is interesting because we've been waiting to see what happens here, right?
Uh-huh.
The big thing they said was that they're looking to boost their international internet business. So 70% of their revenue still comes from internet businesses. They spend about $500 million per year in acquisitions. If you've got a good internet business, you know where to go and sell it. And as we predicted, this concern about the pay TV or DSTV, so for 2016 already, they've lost 288,000 subscribers. And I think that's a combination of, one, them putting up their prices without any warning last month or the month before.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, the consumer under pressure, and I don't think that will change in a hurry. And then I believe, and the stat I haven't seen, but I've heard kind of, is that 90 or over 90% of new, what are the machines called? Explorers? What are those boxes called?
Yeah, the DSTV Explorers.
Yeah, the actual boxes are being sold to already, to people who already have them. So this is their second one. In other words, they're not getting new subscribers, which of course is a problem. And no doubt the Showmaxes have made a dent in kind of this DSTV. So people are beginning to feel the pinch, basically, and it's bad for DSTV. That is the problem. Their revenue, they started reporting in dollars, so it's really hard to calculate kind of where it's going to be. But they said revenue was up 21%, which for Naspers overall.
That's great.
Exactly.
Nobody's complaining about that.
Yeah, so very much more based on internet businesses and the fact that they own 34% of Tencent is what's keeping them afloat and not the pay TV business.
Right.
Which,
Carla wants to know what happened at the PSG AGM.
Wow, that's really impressive, Carla.
People are smart, what can we say? People are smart, Anthea. They want only the best.
Okay, so it was a fairly positive thing. What's happening now is that they've decided to internalize the management fee from Zeta. Zeta will issue 208 million new shares, which they'll give to PSG on an average weighted basis. The fee will be reduced. It was all a good thing, very basically. You know, there was an issue with the management fee that they were paying. So long term, good for Zeta, I think. PSG, kind of, it's fine. You know, it's okay.
Okay.
I can't believe that. That's quite a technical question.
I know, there
wow,
he is.
Wow, very impressive.
Stella Capital?
Yeah. So Stella Capital announced the other day that they had increased their stake in Tor Industrial Holdings from 32 to 35. And what that means, it has now triggered a requirement for Stella to offer all the other or the minority shareholders to buy their shares in Tor. So that's kind of just the regulation. They were a little bit cheeky. They said that they were going to offer a R2.25 a share, which is just barely 2% premium, Tor shares now, to where it closed the day before, which is very cheeky of Stella. Hmm. Normally there's a nice little markup in there, but good for Stella shareholders, for sure. Not so great for Tor shareholders. And the decision now, if you're a Tor shareholder, you get to decide. Do you want to sell your shares to Stella Capital for a 2% premium, or do you want to hold on to them, and then hopefully they'll make you a higher offer? If Stella can buy Tor shares at R2.25, definitely earnings accretive.
Right. In other words, hold on.
Well, if
you're a Tor shareholder, you'd say hold on.
Wait, no, well, I much of them. Yeah, tough one to guess. Very difficult.
All right.
We'll see how that goes.
And I see Steinhoff are not going to be able to get Poundland at the offer that they've made.
Yeah. So Poundland shareholders turned around and said, "No, we're not this is the Stellar Tour situation. Poundland have said, well, actually, no, we're not going to sell our shares to you. If you want to, you must buy them in the market and pay a premium for them, whatever. Steinhoff came back and said, well, actually, now that Brexit has happened, we're not so sure we want to buy you anymore.
Oh.
Which is, again, like, there's a lot of kind of politicking and kind of something of chess going on here.
All right.
If I was Steinhoff, I probably would walk away from it, quite frankly, unless I can buy it for cheap.
All right.
Yeah. And, yeah, that's pretty much kind of the news, I guess, for our stock market on Friday.
Thank you very much, Anthea.
My pleasure.
Excellent. We'll see you later.
Tomorrow.
Very good. There you go. It's Anthea Gardner with a look at the money shot, daily, every day of the week at this time. All right, I hope you're having a good start to your day. What do we want? You want some work? It is Monday.
Okay.
No, somebody said to me if I play that song, they're going to kill me. So I won't. Just this time. All right, when we come back, we'll have a look at the news. Plenty of other good stuff today. CliffCentral.com.